Hello and welcome. It's episode 17 of the Branching Factor podcast. I'm your host, Tommy Thompson, and today we're doing something a little bit different. So I've just returned from San Francisco, where I've spent the last week and change, actually, over at the Game Developers Conference, which runs in the Moscone Center, right in the center of San Francisco. It runs for 5 days, but actually I was out there for a little bit longer than that. I think I was out there for about 8 days in total. And George, of course, George Osborne, one of the co-hosts of the podcast, we thought, oh, it'd be great if we could try and get a little bit of time just to hang out and have a chat about how our week was going. Also, I think, as you can tell, not only have I lost my voice a little bit from just the last week of talking to people, I've also got a bit of a cold. I think just too much has happened in such a short period of time, and it's been a little overwhelming. So I'll pass you over to George and I back on Friday, the last day of GDC. We spent about 30 minutes having a chat. Sadly, the recording kind of conked out a little bit earlier than planned, but we do get about a roughly solid 30 minutes of chat. All right, let's do it.
Cue the music. Here we are.
Ba-ba-ba.
Welcome. This is the GDC edition of Branching Factor. I think we're on episode 17. Don't, Tommy, just record something before this bit because I can't remember anything.
Just say a few numbers so you can easily edit.
I'm Tommy. He's George.
Right.
We're back. We haven't seen each other. When's the last time we saw each other in person?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel
we chat enough, but it's...
It must have been pre-Christmas.
Pre-Christmas for sure. It's not been 2024.
It's not been 2024.
Because this is the first event on my calendar anyway.
Yeah, did we do a video call at some point?
We did do an episode at the start of the month. We did an episode in January.
Yeah,
the start of the year.
I had mic problems, and I still don't know why mic problems occurred. So I think, sorry if I was quiet on that episode. It's rare for me to be quiet,
We cleaned it up. I think on the live version, it didn't work out particularly great, but in the moment, but then after I edited it up, it was totally fine. But yeah, because since then I've had Ben Ridge on.
Yes, lovely Ben.
We had Will Overgaard was on a couple of weeks ago as well.
Ah, look at that.
Will was here. I don't know if you saw him. He was down he was only here in the park like Monday to Wednesday.
No, I think, first of all, I didn't see him, but second, that gives you a real sense of what GDC is like, in which, on the one hand, it's this massive conference in which roughly 10% of the global games industry rocks up to do business on passes that cost thousands of bucks. And then there's also just loads of people hanging out in a garden, and you just have meetings in the garden, as well as the big flashy hotels. And you have this weird whiplash where you go, I've just been sitting in a hotel suite with a big wig exec, and now I'm having a burrito.
You're literally describing a two-hour window I had yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah.
I had a meeting in the W just around the corner, which is like this relatively nice hotel, and it was with like these fairly leading people in a big tech company.
Yeah.
And then I had a burrito and sat down with a Stanford PhD student and did some project supervision for him.
Yeah.
Because like my time here is so varied. I guess we'll get into the week of this. But also, like, if we're talking about the park related thing, go and check out the post-mortem of GDC that I've been recording all throughout the week. It should be on the AI and Games Plus YouTube channel after we record this, because I don't know when I'm going to get around to editing all this stuff. I need to go and sleep for like a month. But yeah, I talk a lot about the real culture that actually exists at GDC isn't really on the expo floor. It's in the Yerba Buena Gardens, which, if you're watching this in the video, we'll quickly turn and you'll actually see it's right. That's at the top of the fountain, and the actual park is down beneath us.
Yeah.
So we're avoiding a lot of the noise by being up here. It's actually like relatively quiet. And also the weather's a little cooler, like it's been scorching the last few
years. It really has, which has been confusing for anyone who's been living in the UK, because the first 3 months of the year had essentially just been rain. So I step off the plane in a winter coat and go, what on earth is going on?
I mean, I'm doing my, look, if I'm working in AI, I need to be kicking about in a leather jacket.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You know, big Jensen vibes.
Totally.
And funnily enough, I actually went to an event last night, briefly, where it was like a demo from an AI company, and their CEO rocked up in a leather jacket, and I'm like, I see what you're doing.
That's it. I see what's happening.
Everyone wants to be an AI rock star. But yeah, so this is us, day five. This is literally the first time we've seen each other.
Yeah.
Despite the fact you got here on Friday.
Yes.
I got here on Saturday.
Yes.
We both started working on Sunday.
Yeah.
Were you working Saturday as well?
So I wasn't working Saturday. What I did on Saturday was I went to an Irish pub at 8 in the morning to go and watch Luton Town versus Nottingham Forest.
So it's
one called Kezar, which is like out on the... It's towards the edge of San Francisco, so...
Oh, right, I've not been there.
So my...
Did you have to shop around to find them?
Well, no, so I have friends who live in San Francisco in the Marina District.
Oh, okay.
And so, well, this is one of the things, is that the San Francisco downtown is an interesting place.
Yes.
I think that's a way to put it. I think you can really see the chasm of inequality in the US, in which you're walking down a street and you can see people who are clearly having a very tough time amongst the homeless population. And then a robot car drives past.
Yeah, so they actually have got the AI taxis here.
Indeed they do, of which my friend who I was staying with said he once had a go-in when a few drinks in and got told off by one of the remote operators for turning on the windscreen wipers because they were worried the car couldn't see properly. That's what happens when you drink an AI drive. But for me, it's been an interesting GDC because I've been staying out of the town and then coming in for it.
Okay.
And so...
So you're coming in on the BART every morning?
Coming in on the bus.
On the bus?
The trusty number 30. Ooh. There we go, from the Marina District. But it's created a different sense for me. So I come in, I do what I need to do, had my meetings, but I've actually been... I've been avoiding most of the parties because they're great ways of socialising, they're great ways to catch up. You can do some amazing business development there too if you really get into them.
I have enabled for several really interesting opportunities to crop up for me literally in the last two nights.
Absolutely. But for me, one of the things that I've just hit a point with networking events and industry events is I just like the discipline of being like, okay, I'm going to fill my day with stuff.
Meeting and just
and then
this.
Go home. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are people being like, so which parties did you go to this week? And I'm going, I might have been in bed by 10 each night.
Oh, you know, I got to bed at 10 o'clock on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Because I went to the Game Developer Choice Awards and the IGF.
Yeah.
And it finishes pretty early, actually, because it starts at like 6:30 or like,
does,
I think it actually starts at 6:30. It wraps up at like 9.
Yeah.
And in my hotel, I got a solid 8.5 hours sleep, which I've been really struggling with jet lag. I keep waking up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Oh, God, I could have punched God. I felt invincible.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, but the thing is, I do know that by not going to the parties, I'm probably missing some opportunities, but it's that trade-off between, and it's a hard one, it's a completely personal thing about what you do in terms of your meetings, in terms of being as fresh as you can on the day by getting more sleep, getting more downtime versus missing out on those potential impromptu opportunities. Or, you know, like, you know, we were discussing this beforehand, and you were saying you almost had like a meeting that then gets reinforced by bumping into someone at the party and talking to them about something.
Yeah. We literally had a meeting with a company, a very big AAA studio, on yesterday afternoon, but we bumped into each other prior to that at a party that I attended for all of 30-40 minutes on Tuesday night. And they were like, hey, we were kind of thinking of talking to you about these topics.
Yeah.
Are these things that are of relevance? Are these things that you could potentially help us out with? And I said, well, let me tell you a little bit about some of the stuff I've been doing with some companies just recently.
Yeah.
And they said, oh, this is fantastic, because we actually have a big strategy meeting. Everyone's coming off the expo floor to go into a big strategy meeting on Wednesday. This is going to help us. And so, funnily enough, the conversation had actually evolved and had escalated to a certain point on the Thursday, that going from could we do this to this looks like it will happen which was really exciting. That is useful. But also, like you say, like I think if you watch the video post-mortem thing that I'm going to do, you're going to notice my gradual decay. My face is puffy, I am deep, I keep drinking so much water, but I'm quite dehydrated, I've got crow's feet, I look like an absolute wreck. You're looking great by comparison.
I think getting in on the Friday helped. I think the whole process, and I think actually just having that more healthy separation of not having somewhere that I can just walk back to in 5 minutes actually forces me to think about, okay, it's going to take me minimum 20 minutes, maybe 40 minutes to get back. Therefore, it forced me to pace myself a bit, which I think is useful.
Yeah.
But like I say, I've missed some of those opportunities because, and I think it'll be interesting as well, I'll make sure I watch your post-mortem as well, but one of the things about events like this, and a lot of the people I speak to are people who are out of the industry, and they go, these events feel quite different to other conferences in other sectors. Why is that? And I'm going, well, I think the games industry is so often, well, I mean, first of all, it's kind of heads up, heads down. You're either heads up looking for the horizon and you need to find stuff which forces you out,
yeah,
or you're heads down and you're working on things, which means you're never here.
And the vast majority of the industry, like 99.9% of the games industry, never come to GDC.
Absolutely. But if you're in that heads up thing, you're out here looking for stuff. So that means that these events are crucial, because, and this is the other element to it, is even before the remote work wave came in, and I know we're having all this whole discussion about return to work and this, that, and the other, but even before that, the industry's so distributed in comparison to other creative industries,
yeah,
that what you don't have is incidental networking on like a day-to-day basis in anything like the same way. So the example I'm thinking about is, if you think about film and TV, and I think especially film, people just go to LA, right?
Yeah.
Because the industry's constantly active there all year round. So if you're looking to pitch projects, there's always people in town, there's always people to meet. And yeah, you'll go to, you know, a film festival, like you'll go to Venice or whatever once a year. But actually, you don't need to be out there doing business in the same way that the games industry does, because you have all of those more regular incidental touch points.
Yeah.
And whereas here, it's like, it's almost like essay cram, right? You know, you cram all your networking into one thing. So yeah, I mean, so what you're talking about that sense of, you've got business meetings, but also the company knows, we've got everyone in town, so we'll do our strategy day.
Yeah, so like I scheduled several, I think I scheduled about a dozen meetings before I got here, and then the number of meetings that have emerged from a literal crossing of the street at the Moscone, like going from the north side entrance to the south side entrance, and somebody seeing me as I cross the road, we stop, we shake hands, and they go, do you have the app? And I'm like, yes. And I will message you on the app, because there's a big conference app that you can sign into and you can exchange messages and book meetings. And they're like, right, great. And then 20 minutes later, I got a text message from them. And then somebody, I got another meeting. I had a meeting, literally the one I had before I came here, was because someone else had a meeting with me.
Yeah.
And then they had a meeting with this person. And they said, you know Tommy Thompson from EIN Games is here. And I'm like, what? So then they messaged me. And so and yeah, I think it's difficult to constrain and it's difficult to manage. And I think you're then in this situation of, like you say, we're up heads up above the parapet. We're trying to find work.
Yeah.
So you've got to look at all these situations and say, is this worth an investment of my time? And some of them have not been. And I haven't responded. I'm sorry. I didn't respond to your thing, because I looked at it and went, like, there's other things I could spend that 30-minute window on.
Yeah.
But even then, sometimes, and it's also not even just a case of, and we've talked about this before, about making your way into the industry, it's not like I'm being ruthless and cutthroat. Like, yo, have you guys got money? Like, no, then I'm not talking to you.
Yeah.
It's more, hey, this company would like to at least have an introduction and put me in a room with other people and just have a conversation for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And that greases the wheels.
Yeah.
That can turn into a thing a year from now, it can turn into a thing 2 years from now. In fact, literally the big AAA studio that I'm talking about, and I'm not naming names because there's no contract signed or anything else yet, that was a conversation that started at GDC last year, and we have been in, had this ongoing chat, and then then when I saw them, they're like, okay, we actually have something that we think you are very well equipped to help us with.
Yeah.
Let's start talking specifics, let's start talking numbers.
Completely. And, so, I think as well, on that point about being cutthroat, even though we're here to meet people, we're here to find interesting connections, business, you know, we're willing to have the meeting where you have a nice chat, maybe something else comes off it later in the day, and it takes 6 months, a year or whatever to build. But by the same token, a trip to GDC, I mean, if you are not, I mean, even if we're with an expo pass, and even with me staying with friends, it's north of £1,000, right?
Yeah.
You know, and it's probably close to
£1,500. It cost me £1,400 just to get here and stay here.
Yeah.
And also, I think really important caveat for that, I know when GDC happens before almost anyone, because I am a summit advisor. I'm technically a member of staff, even though I'm not actually paid by Informa. I'm essentially a volunteer who gets bonuses. And I know when the event's happening before anyone else, so I book my flights in May.
Yeah.
I book my hotel in September.
Yeah.
And then actually I changed my hotel like a couple of months later, so I probably could have saved even more money. And also I downgraded my hotel. Like last year, like one of the things that we get is there's a conference booking system. So actually, let's just quickly turn the camera around. You're going to see there's an awful lot of very big buildings behind us, and most of them are hotels. Now, the thing that nobody actually talks about is when GDC is booked, in order to actually use the Moscone Center, there is a requirement of how many hotels they can guarantee are going to be booked up and filled. And that actually impacts how much of the space of the convention center you're actually allowed to access. It's not, you know, it's not one of these things to talk about publicly, but it's how it works.
Yeah.
So if you want to be able to use Moscone North, Moscone South, Moscone West, and then some of the other like satellite buildings, you need to be able to show you're going to like half fill the Marriott, which is that one over there.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. And so like last year, I didn't stay in any of those because I can't afford those, but there's like a booking system that gives you a discount. I stayed in a hotel that's maybe 7 or 8 blocks from here. It wasn't worth the money because, as you say, like how are you investing your time? And I was investing my time quite aggressively networking because this was my first time here. How many times have you been here?
So this is actually my first.
Wow, there you go.
What I really enjoy is that people, I said this to someone and someone said, you've got the sense of being a seasoned GDC goer. There was someone who said that I have the feeling of like a minor royal who turns up to a series of receptions, that I'm just sort of always there. So the fact that I hadn't actually been to GDC before was kind of mind-blowing for them. But there was a reason for it, which was in my 20s, obviously, I'm in my 20s starting out. You know, I've not got the cash, I've not got the seniority to get.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then when I got to UK, pandemic hit. And then essentially GDC just doesn't come back until I'm done. So this has been my first one. And so you do have to kind of learn the rhythms of it. But fortunately, I know so many people who know GDC that I was able to just go, cool, okay, so what are the things to expect? It's like, at most, get an expo pass unless you really are going to make the most of the talks. And it's like, know that you're going to be spending most of your time in the hotels doing the meetings around you.
Yeah, yeah.
And just generally, you know, don't mess about, right? You're here, it's expensive, there's loads of really senior people, important people, fill your diary, and then just make sure that you try and give yourself enough downtime in between so that you can kind of not burn yourself out.
Don't treat it like a jolly. Like
no, because
and it's, I think it's easy to possibly start doing that because there's so many like satellite events, incidental events going on that you can just be like, you know what, I'm just going to go and get faced and check out like some tech demo that
absolutely.
Epic's running.
And because we've done one of these before when we were at Develop, right?
So we did.
And the thing about...
And we'll probably do one again this year.
Yeah, well, exactly. But develop feels different. Develop does feel more like a jolly. But I think but that's the thing. It's about the context of what the event is trying to do.
Yeah.
And I think GDC, you just have such enormous critical mass of the industry that if you don't maximize those meeting spots during the day, you know, you are kind of you're running yourself short because you know, talking about like I was saying, like, now I didn't go to parties. I did go to a drinks reception every night still.
Yeah, yeah.
Because drinks receptions run from say 4:30 onwards.
Yeah, so, 4:30 to like 7, 8 or something, maybe the latest.
Absolutely. So, but I mean, the main thing is GDC is very much you're here for business. Gamescom is very much you're here for business as well. And then with the other industry events, there is more space for that kind of community aspect where
you're running the London Dev Conference like next month, but that's like partnered with WASD.
Yeah.
So that's like there is actually like more of a trade. It's not a trade event, but it's more of a public showing of a lot of indie games. But there is going to be business happening.
Yeah, completely. And
in
so,
that there is business. Well, I participated in the London Finance Festival at the event last year. Then you're also running a developer conference, which then begins to have like those intersections. So
completely, absolutely. And so, but yeah, I think there's always that thing about yes, do you leave yourself a bit of time and do take a few opportunities for social events because you never know what's going to come out of it. But actually, for something like this, you're probably spending too much money to go, oh, you know what, I'm just going to leave myself 5 hours in the middle of the day to do nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I had to write the newsletter this week in between meetings.
Yeah, so I pre-gamed. I wrote the Iron Games newsletter before I went out, and I actually wrote in it I'll give you an update on GDC when I get back. I read the video game industry memo on Thursday morning, and I'm like, Jesus Christ, George, you wrote this while you were here.
Right, absolutely. Oh. I mean, so I managed to basically top and tail with some work on Sunday. And then everything else, it was genuinely finding 20, 25 minute windows. Mm. And then I left myself one 90 minute window on Wednesday to basically go upload, get this sorted. But even then, it's like, there's loads I missed because there's so many things that were announced, and I had to get everything ready. I had to do stuff at the beginning of the week. So there were absolutely loads of announcements, like a Meta Publishing Prototype Fund, the Lego Fortnite stuff, where it was just like,
I was going to say, one of those two, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because we're also in different spaces, and we're doing different things. I guess, like, what's the, like, give us like the 60 to 90 second wrap up. What's the big things you've been hearing about? What's
60
the big
to 90 things seconds. I'm literally looking at my watch there and going, right, 60 to 90 seconds.
All right.
Go. 3, 2, 1, go. So I would say the first thing is, I think the industry is really understanding that allowing toxic communities to exist is no longer viable. I think if you look across various things announced this week, including starting with Microsoft talking about content inclusion guidelines, talking to companies doing AI moderation, and then talking to people about what's happened with GameGate 2.0 and about how much research is coming out saying players hate toxic communities and it costs you money. People are having to adapt to it, one, for commercial reality, but two, for politics. There's a whole load of law coming in this year that's going to say if illegal stuff happens in your game in terms of user-to-user communication, you're responsible for it. So I think that's changing. Number two, I thought on the AI side of things, I saw the GDC developer survey at the beginning of the conference. I thought the generative AI stuff showed a really interesting divide between business and developers.
I've got a follow-up on that, for sure.
I've got a very strong sense of why this is. I think it goes back to what we talked about on the newsletter, in which developers are very focused on how it fits into the workflow. It's complicated, it's tricky, so they're very cautious about it. Whereas business development professionals are using ChatGPT to write emails, right? Yep. They're not thinking about it in that way of going how this could diminish your returns, so I think that's there. And then the third thing, and I'm going to probably go slightly over here, games media is dead, long live games media. So, I've heard here the trade press is really struggling. I've seen stories about the consumer press on the decline. You know, Kotaku, their editor-in-chief left this week.
Yeah, I just saw that, yeah.
But everyone is talking about newsletters, everyone is talking about podcasts, everyone is talking about data and information and the desire to get it and the desire to fund and support it. So games media is surviving, it's just changing. And I think that's going to be a very interesting thing to watch in the next few years.
Subscribe to our respective Substacks, please.
Hey.
AI and games, video game industry.
Exactly. I need to ask you how you're monetizing that, so I'm going to ask you that off camera.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Also, congratulations on your first sponsorship. I saw that was at Sumo.
So it's
fantastic.
So starting to get sponsor cash in. So if you enjoy industry insight and puns, get in touch, because your business can now reach a very solid subscription base.
Also, you can actually subscribe on this podcast. Check the episode notes. There is actually a sponsorship page if you want to have a little plug in an episode. Go for it. Anyway, I'm going to try and do a roughly 90 seconds of where I've been, because most of the first 2 days I was at the AI summit, and then it's been a lot of meetings. Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go. The sector right now is very much increasingly conscious of the need to be aware of what's happening with generative AI technologies, but they are also seeing it as an incredibly risky proposition, both financially, technologically, ethically, and legally. And so this is something that is going to have a big impact down the line. However, it is not changing at the end of the day what's really happening in AI. The vast majority of AI that we are seeing getting talked about and discussed in these big talks is mostly good old-fashioned game AI that has been around for 20, 30 years, because at the end of the day, that's the thing that's still going to help you ship your project. That's the thing you need if you want enemies and encounter design, all that sort of stuff. So that's been a big part of it. The second thing is that there's companies looking into how they can actually use generative AI. They've actually went away and made an entire game using only generative AI tools, and they did it in 6 months. They're never releasing it because they're aware of the ethical and legal concerns of ever trying to do it, but they were also aware they wanted to try it because they wanted to be able to see how this changes the pipeline. This is the conversation I'm having everywhere. Everyone is coming to talk to me because I'm in this weird intersection where I get to talk to everyone, and it's my business to talk to everyone. No one is wanting to push forward. No one is wanting to be the company that goes forward and be the first one to do generative AI right now. It's a chicken and egg problem. Until we start seeing games that actually utilize the technology in interesting ways, no one else is really willing to invest, but no one is willing to go forward and do that because of the risk. And we know that, you know, AI, like game development, is generally a very risky proposition. The situation is not moving. Then when you add into it Steam's recent changes to the guidelines, and of course, the handful of people that are aware, the AI Act was approved in the European Union, and that means that so many AI, generative AI tools, critically, might not exist in Europe in 18 months' time, and that means they're not going to be viable as a game production tool. Yeah.
That's good.
There's a whole bunch of other stuff, but that's the kind of summary of it. I've had so many meetings with people who are in much bigger companies than I am, who are very much involved in actually driving the change in technology, and they're asking me, what are you seeing?
Yeah, I agree. And I think the AI Act point that you just mentioned at the end, it's a really important thing that lots of people have missed. They've not seen it. And the reason why it's important is, as you say, it's going to potentially restrict the kinds of generative AI products that are available in the EU. And if you look at what happens in the EU, it almost always affects things elsewhere.
Yeah.
So if you look at an iPhone and you go USB-C charging,
that's the EU,
right? You know, it's like people are like, why are Nintendo suddenly now doing their next Switch? Because, and this is part of it, the EU has a batteries directive that says that technology, including switches, are going to have replaceable batteries. Which the current build of the Switch just does not have. So I'm not entirely certain, but pretty confident Switch 2 is going to have that, because they don't want to have that fight. So if the AI Act does have that kind of influence, it will change the world of the games industry. But yes, broadly speaking, all I'm doing here is going, I 100% agree with you, Tommy, if not 110%.
So yeah, it's been very interesting for me, because so on one hand, like my whole thing here is that I talked about this in the postmortem video, that out in the broader space, I'm meeting more with indies, I'm meeting more with students and connecting with them and trying to help foster a culture. Because one of the things that I have to also deal with is, like I said, a lot of companies are talking to me now because I have my finger on the pulse, and that's both terrifying and edifying at the same time. But also, as I said, advisor, myself and a team of four other people, we run the AI Summit, and as a result of that, we have a huge influence on how AI appears at GDC. There's an awful lot of sponsored talks over in Core. Some of those talks are there because we said no to them, because we had
got a lot of stuff coming in.
I can't get into specifics, but with regards to the numbers of submissions to a particular summit, we might have broken several records this year. And we have an awful lot of people in very high positions who have earned an awful lot of money to start their new companies, who really want to come and talk to us about their tech. And we are not interested, because the AI Summit is a space for engineers.
Yeah.
So we had a lot of CEOs, CTOs, CPOs, CFOs, CCOs, ABCs, 123s, and we just don't care. There was one or two exceptions to that rule, but that's because they were CEOs that emerged off the back of the fact that they were like shit-hot engineers and then became a CEO of a new company. So we were like, yeah, we're letting them in because we know they have value, they have quality to our culture and to our community. And so it's interesting being in that space where it's now became like, it's like Cheers.
Yeah.
Like everybody knows my name.
Yeah.
I had a glass shatter moment. You know, like that episode of How I Met Your Mother?
Yeah.
Where like someone said something and now they can't unsee it or unhear it.
Yeah.
Somebody pointed out to me, they said, there's a generational shift happening in our space right now. You can tell when people come into the room to the AI Summit, and that room caters to about 300, 350 people. Do they go over and sit and shake hands to Steve Rabin? Steve Rabin is one of the founders of the AI Summit. He's been in the space for nearly 20 years, has helped write, he's been the editor of numerous AI books, AI Game Programming, Wisdom Game AI Pro. And they said, see, if they're a certain age or a certain level of their career, they come and shake your hand.
Yeah.
And I, as soon as they said it, I couldn't unsee it. And it's like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because kids don't want to read, right? And even then, like literally, I've made episodes based on chapters in Steve's books.
Exactly.
But they don't know who Steve is, but they know who I am.
What kind of a big deal?
It's funny, because like, maybe, but also like,
It's funny because as soon as I leave room 2002 in West Moscone, no one gives a fuck about who I am.
And I think that's the kind of grounding you need.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your ego's gonna go off the scale. I mean, that's it. But it's also, as a final thought, it is quite interesting about how all of this is developing and changing, because I'm seeing a similar thing actually, in which, you know, there is clearly sort of now an established sort of elder statesperson generation, but actually they're sort of turning up in a kind of, oh look, there's a nice handshake capacity, but people are not actually asking them what they're thinking about the industry anymore. They're going, oh, isn't it lovely to see this person? And then what they're doing is they're asking the people who are 15, 20 years younger.
Because they're the people that are going to be here 5, 10 years from now.
Because they're going to be here, and also they're going to be making decisions. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be choosing where budget goes, what games are made, and ultimately shaping the future of the industry. So
I had a very long conversation.
And there we have it. That's the recording that we managed to put together. It was a little something, but hopefully, and ideally, it didn't go as long as we would have liked, but hopefully it gives you, you know, something of an indication of what it was like throughout the week. Over on AI and Games Plus, which is, of course, the video home of the Branching Factor podcast, I will be doing my vlog series, or just a single vlog video rather, where I kind of give you a full breakdown of what my week was like, and you get to see a little bit more of that behind the scenes. So if you are interested in finding out more about it, be sure to tune in over on AI and Games Plus on YouTube. And with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode. I'm going to go back to, probably going to go for a lie down now that I think about it, but we'll be back soon with a new episode digging into all of the weird and wonderful corners of the video games industry. Alright, stay safe, take care, and we'll be back. The Branching Factor podcast is hosted and produced by me, Tommy Thompson, with support from Anne Sullivan, George Osborne, Mike Cook, and Quang Yoon. Our theme music is provided courtesy of Ben Ridge. The logo and thumbnail art is thanks to Helen O'Dell. Special thanks to Shraddha Gupta and Phoebe Trigg for additional production support. And of course, to all of you out there listening. Thanks for joining us for this episode of Branching Factor. Wherever you are in the world, be sure to stay safe, have fun, and we will be back.